I'm Stacey Gross, and this is Two Moms Day Drinking. Demetrius Thigpen grew up in Detroit. He describes his mother as single because his father, who struggled with alcoholism, was so inconsistently present in his life and in the lives of his sister and mother that it almost became as if he weren't actually there at all. Demetrius recalls one point at which the family was in their car and his mother stopped on the side of the road to call his father, sitting outside a liquor store, to get into the car with them. That was the moment, Demetrius said, when he thought to himself that he could never do that to his own children. Demetrius joined the Marine Corps, he said, leaving his family and his hometown behind to start a new life. And, he said, while the Marine Corps saved his life, he now struggles with the fact that it keeps him from being consistently physically present with his own three children. Still, Demetrius said, he thinks of that inconsistency as what keeps food on his family's table rather than what keeps him away from the table himself more than he might prefer.
That's absolutely. So where are you from?
Originally, I'm from Detroit, Michigan, but I'm currently stationed in California.
Oh, okay. What branch of the military?
Marine Corps.
The Marine Corps? I just spoke with a Marine who is stationed in Japan the other night.
Oh, really? How was that?
It was good. It was good. His whole story is that he kind of takes on a lot of the parenting duties while his wife works. So that was his thing. So your story that you kind of want to share is that you grew up without a father and that inspired you to want to be a really good dad, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, I grew up, my father came in and out of our lives, you know, because he was an alcoholic. And growing up with somebody, you know, it's one thing to grow up with somebody that's just not in your life in general. And then there's growing up with somebody that's in and out of your life. And I feel like that's almost like as if like you have a Band-Aid on and it's constantly just getting ripped off over and over and over. So when I had kids, I promised myself that that was something that I was going to do. I was going to stay in my children's lives regardless of the situation.
When did you have your first child?
I had my first child in 2012. My oldest is 7.
I have 7-year-old twins that were born in 2012.
Ooh, how's that?
Yeah. Intense. They're intense. And it's just me, so.
Oh, God.
It's like a 3-ring circus all the time.
Oh, no. Fraternal twins are identical.
They are fraternal and they are night and day. So different.
Really?
Yeah. Which is even more fun because I need to switch parenting styles like on a dime, which is not easy to do.
You know, I always wonder, you know, is there such thing as a good twin and an evil twin?
It goes day by day. Every now and then, one of them will turn evil for a little bit.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And they fight. Oh, they fight nonstop. But they can team up so well together when they need to against me. So it's...
Oh, God. Those internal affairs just always get the best of them. And then they can work together. That's how my kids are. Yeah, I have a 7-year-old, 5-year-old, and then I also have a 2-year-old.
Now, are you stationed away from them? Are they in Detroit or...
Well, right now, my family is in Arizona and I'm just in California.
And how long will that last for you?
I think until the end of this year.
What's going on there with the coronavirus thing? Are you guys...
You know, I kind of just feel like everything just got blown out of proportion, you know? And when you look at the things of how to prevent the coronavirus, it's the basic things that we all learned in kindergarten. We all learned it in kindergarten, you know? Literally talk to my kids about this, you know, wash your hands, brush your teeth, cover your mouth when you cough and sneeze, you know, things like that. Like, why are we now bringing this up? Because what? Let me guess. Because it's an emergency.
Yeah. This is like news. But I think that they need to stop reporting how many new cases there are because they're not new cases. They're just testing positive. And every day the panic starts over and over.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then my whole issue is when did the shortage of toilet paper come into effect? Why is
it? I know.
What does that?
It's a respiratory illness. We do not need to like hoard the toilet paper.
And I'm just sitting back thinking to myself, like, why? Why is it that now toilet paper is just becoming like scarce? Like, I shouldn't have to trade things for toilet paper.
Like, this is how The Walking Dead starts. And toilet paper is going to be our new currency. I'm convinced.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more. Like, I was just telling my wife, I was like, are you ready? Because we've watched all 8 seasons. We've seen Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead.
Yeah.
This is how it starts, right here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I thought I was prepared, but the first day that I couldn't buy toilet paper, I'm like, I'm done with this. This is not going to work for me.
You know, I read the survivor's guide to the zombie apocalypse. And the trick is you're not fighting the zombies. It's the people, you know, and I've been seeing people like look at me crazy because I got like, you know, toilet paper. And I'm just like, oh, no, we're not going to like, I don't know if you know, but I'm Negan. I'm a Negan type of person.
Okay. Yeah. Do not mess with your toilet paper.
You know, like with my charisma and my personality, I'm going to have a cult by the end of this.
Nice. You're going to like gather your own little army and they will go find the toilet paper for you.
Absolutely. You know, and I have my own podcast. So all I got to do is just put the word, you know, I just got to put the word out there. Hey, this is what's going on. You know, we're still going to become better versions of ourselves, but this is how we're surviving now. And everybody's going to go with it.
Tell me about your podcast. What's it called?
Oh, so I'm the host and creator of the podcast, Extraordinary Thoughts for the Ordinary Mind. And it's not saying that there's, you know, it's a podcast dedicated to helping us become a better version of ourselves. And that's not saying that there's anything wrong with us, but who doesn't want to become something better than right. What we are right now?
Yeah, growth should be continual.
Absolutely. So each day we talk about situations that are just holding us back from becoming a better version. I've talked about anxiety. I've talked about depression. I've talked about relationships. I've talked about financial problems. I even had an episode about the coronavirus. The little things is what caused the coronavirus. And how I broke it down was that the same way that these little things such as, you know, washing your hands, brushing your teeth could prevent a pandemic, it's the same way with your life. There's no such thing as an overnight success. The way that it works is the little things that you did up until that moment that helped you become a success, overnight success.
How long have you been doing a podcast?
I just hit a year last week. Last Sunday was a year.
So what brought you into the medium of podcasting?
To be honest, depression, anxiety. I just, being in the military, you know, it's like being in a pack of wolves. You know, and when I say like being in a pack of wolves, everybody wants to be the alpha male. Everybody wants to be the best. And, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I was the best. You see what I'm saying? Like I'm not low on the totem pole where my feats don't go recognized. But here I am doing good, being better and quote unquote being better. But I wasn't happy. I was never happy. You know, I'm trying to prove everything to everybody else. But at the end of the day, am I even happy with the accomplishments? Am I even satisfied? You know, in the days when I would have a long day at work or I just felt stressed out to the point where I couldn't talk to nobody, I didn't want to go home and burden my wife with X, Y, and Z of what's going on with my world. When you're the one that stays home with the kids, you have X, Y, and Z going on in your world. So, you know, everyone always wanted, you know, and I'm also a speaker. So I've spoken at colleges, I've spoken at high schools. And the thing about being a speaker is that, you know, people still need to hear you speak. But, you know, people don't want to book you if they never heard you speak. But the only way for them to hear you speak is if they book you. So I ended up just like, I finally just put two and two together. And I was like, you know what, why don't I just launch a podcast? The idea came up on Monday. And by Friday, we launched our first episode. Now, throughout the week, I was asking myself, what should I talk about? You know, and I listened to Rob Dial. I listened to House of Greatness. I listened to all these podcasts. But the one thing that I just wanted to do was just get everything off my chest. And my first episode, I just ended up just throwing up with like verbally throwing up, essentially.
Hey, how has the reception been? Have you gotten a lot of people kind of coming back and listening? And
surprisingly, like, I didn't know that the problems I have, everybody else has. You know, that's the crazy part about it. We're going into season 3 now, and I took a break off just so that way, one, I can just recharge. But everything that I've talked about, like, you know, it's just the support and just the outreach of just everybody just reaching out and just saying like, wow, like what you said really hit home. Like, that's exactly what I go through.
That's awesome. That's kind of what I'm trying to do with mine, too, for parents. I was home with my kids for the first 3 years. I wasn't working. The relationship was not good. And I felt really isolated in it. So I just kind of wanted to bring parents together and hopefully somebody will listen and hear, you know, a story that speaks to them and they don't feel alone anymore in it, you know.
Absolutely. And that's one thing that I try to tell people is that the chapter that you're about to close, somebody else is about to open it. So why not share?
That's awesome. That's a really good way to put it. So growing up without a father, can you talk a little bit about what that felt like, the subjective experience of that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So once again, I was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. And I know my mother did the best that she could. She did the best that she could. But at the end of the day, I was going to be a product of my environment before I even took my first breath. I grew up, once again, in an inner city, hit by drugs, And then now I have my father who struggles with being an alcoholic. And the problem with having an alcoholic in your family is that they come in your life, they come out of your life. They come in your life and they come out of your life. And I remember being 8 years old and my father sitting me down telling me that I was going to be the man of the house. I didn't even know what, you know, I didn't even know how to tie my shoes, but, you know, I'm about to go ahead and be.
Right? That's some pressure for a kid like
that. Absolutely. And, you know, he tells, you know, you got to take care of your sister, take care of your mother. And I'm wondering, like, where are you going to go? Like, what do you mean? Like, why am I got to do all of this? And that's exactly how it was. You know, my father would come in my life when I was 11. He'd come back out. Then he'd come back in when I was 15. From 15 to 17, 17 to 21. My oldest has met my father, but when she met him, she was only like 2 years old. None of my kids have met my father.
So what's your relationship with him? Is he still in and out, or is it any more consistent than it used to be?
He's definitely still in and out. And I think now, you know, and the thing is that when you grow up and you get used to somebody being out of your life, like there's only so many times that you're going to take them coming in your life, coming out of your life to the point where you get used to them just not being there. And that's really where it got to, is that if you're just going to leave, just stay gone. You feel me? Because I don't want you to come in my life and make some promises to me. And this actually recently happened last year. My father calls me out the blue. I don't even know how he got my number. And, you know, and the thing about that is that I've made it perfectly clear with everyone to stop giving my number out, you know, and he gets my number. He randomly calls me. And as soon as he calls, immediately I go back into the father and son mode. Like, immediately. Dad, how are you been? You know, everything of that nature. Deep down, I'm thinking to myself, like, no, don't get attached. Don't do that. Because you already know what's about to happen. Then he says, you know, how's California going? How are the kids? You know, I heard that you got a couple of kids. I was like, I don't got a couple of kids, Dad. I have 3 kids, you know? And then he tells me, he's like, you know, you've never met him. And, you know, and I try to be mad, but at the same time, it's like, try to enjoy the time that you have right now. You know, and then he says, like, hey, you know, I was thinking about going to Comic-Con this year. You know, I was going to fly out to California. You know, what do you think? And I just flat out told him. I was like, look, Dad, you know, what you asking me this time around is that you're not just asking me if we going to go to Comic-Con together. You asking me to bring my son with me. Now, I don't make promises to my kids that I can't keep, you know. And my son's not to be, and he's not about to experience the first time somebody couldn't keep their promise from you. So if you're not going to do it, don't do it, you know? And once again, he didn't come out here.
At what age, did you always plan to have kids? Did you always, as a child or as a young adult, did you think I want to have kids? Or was it something that you weren't sure you wanted to do?
To be honest, I knew I was going to have kids eventually. I just didn't know that I was going to be married. I had no idea that I was going to be married, because marriage wasn't like a common, you know, everybody wants to be married and live happily ever after. But one, there's no, you don't have to live happily ever after and be married, you know, but also I was raised in a single parent household. You know, my mom wasn't married. So the idea of me being married wasn't something that clicked. I wasn't going to think to myself, oh, I want to be married. I can raise kids on my own. My mom's raising us on our own. So I didn't think that I was ever going to be married.
And did you, at what point, when you started thinking about, okay, I do want to have kids at some point, was it always, did you use your father's behavior and your relationship with him as a yardstick from the beginning?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The fact that he wasn't in my life made it left something on me, because it was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to put my kids through that. You know, I'm not the only child. I have a sister, and she got affected by it differently than I did. I harbored that. I kept all of that pain to myself. She let all of that out, you know. And I remember in the 4th grade, we were driving. My mom was taking us from school. She picked us up from school. We were on our way home. And she suddenly just stops. She stops in the middle of the road and she says, Danny, get in the car. That's my father's name. And I look over and there he is sitting on the corner outside of a liquor store. And she says, Danny, get in the car. Danny, get in the car. Next thing you know, me and my sister, we see him. Next thing you know, we chiming in on it. Dad, get in the car. Dad, dad, dad. And he's so drunk and out of his mind that he don't even see us. And I knew right then and there, I was like, I couldn't do that to my kids. You know, imagine you get with somebody, even if it doesn't work out. Your child, you know, and the thing about it is that me and my dad have so much in common. In fact, all of my behavior, my tics, my hobbies, everything that I like, it came from him. So it does bother me a lot.
And did you ever have issues with drugs and alcohol yourself, or did your sister? Like, is that something that either one of you started to follow in his footsteps, or was it something that you saw and you were like, never for me?
For me, I knew for a fact, I was like, alcoholism runs in my family. So everybody on my dad's side of the family is an alcoholic. All his brothers and sisters are all alcoholics. So I knew for a fact that if this is something that if I ever drank too much, this is something that could potentially happen to me. And my sister, she got the idea too, is that this could easily be happen. And then now, not only that, you also are in a family where everyone's an alcoholic. So it's not like, oh, you know, somebody's going to say, hey, you need to slow down. No, they're going to tell you to pick it up. So I definitely was conscious about that.
That's good. It's good that you had that insight even as a kid, because a lot of kids, you know, that's the first thing they want to do is just to get out of that emotional space.
Absolutely. And you hear it all the time, because this is what I saw, this is what I became. But that's not the case. You know, we have the pen in our hands. We write our own destiny. You know, just because you saw it, because you saw it is the reason why you shouldn't do it. You have experience in this. You know exactly the effects that it'll have.
So how old were you when you had your first kid? And was it like, okay, we are planning to have a child and this is what we're going to do? Or was it like kind of a surprise?
Oh, we did not plan that. Oh, we did not. I can assure you that my oldest, Dakota, was not planned. In fact, none of them kids was planned. You know, I want to go on record and say, outside of my kids, I don't like kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And my wife don't like kids. We're not a kid-friendly household. So I was already engaged, though. I was engaged when we found out that she was pregnant with our first child. So it wasn't, what are we going to do? We were already getting married. But we had already said, we was like, you know, this is it. We're only going to have one kid.
Yeah.
Like, we don't like kids.
Yeah. Sounds so familiar.
You know, and then next thing you know, boom, here's my son. And I remember when she told me that she was pregnant with my son, I said, Sandra, what are you
doing? This is not us.
We don't like kids. You know, why? Okay, now we're a party of four. And then my last one comes and I'm like, no, we can't keep doing this.
We
don't like kids. Okay, we already have a boy. We had a girl. What do you think this one's going to be, a cyclops? Like, we can't keep doing this.
Right. There are no other options. This is the end now for us.
You know, and I told him, you know, and one thing, you know, all parents think their kids are cute. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you right now, my kids are gorgeous. And I don't know how they worked it out in the genetic gene pool to be able to get these genes. My son can never take a bad photo. And we've taken photos of him off guard. He has never taken a bad,
trying
too
to catch
photogenic.
Him.
Too, you know, he's just too photogenic. And I told my wife, I was like, each child is just getting cuter and cuter. But my issue is that we're going to slip up, and you need to understand that our luck is going to run out.
Yeah.
And we're going to have that ugly
that
kid.
That one ugly
and she's
kid.
Like, you know, that one kid that looks like, I don't, and I told my wife, I was like, I don't want to have like a Fozzie running around the house. Like, he's not going to fit.
It's not going to be good.
You know, and she's like, that's your kid. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't say that I was going to disown him, but I mean, it's going to be awkward.
Everybody's going to know.
Gonna
know. I mean, you're going to go for those pictures at Kmart, and everybody's going to be like, ooh, that one, though.
Yeah. You know, I got to tell the kid to hold the camera because, you know, you can't be in the photo, man. Like, you know, so that was my issue with keep having so many kids. Yeah. Like, eventually we're going to have that one kid.
Yeah, you're pushing it.
You know, and then we got to name him something like Fred or something like that. Like, you can't.
Right.
You gotta give him like a dog's
yep.
name, like Fred or, you know.
Yeah. Like, this is not really one of us. This is just something that we have. Like, this is a pet.
You know, I love him, but, you know, I don't, you know, I love him.
Yeah. What would you say your parenting style is? Do your wife and you have the same style, or do you guys argue?
We're definitely, I want to go on the record and say that I'm the cool parent. I want to go on the record and say that I'm the cool parent. I'm definitely the parent that if you see us at like a sports game, like, you know, basketball game, football game, volleyball, softball, I'm that parent that's going to get put out because I'm cheering the loudest for my kid. I'm yelling at the other kids. I'm starting fights with the parents. You know, I'm that parent that says number three sucks. And then somebody says like, number three is my son. Then you suck too. You know, me and my wife, we're showing up to the game. We pre-gamed to the game. You know, we took a Uber there. Because we got drunk on the way to have a good time. But I would definitely say that as far as like, but it balances it out because my wife is also like, you know, she's the one, the organizer. She's the one that puts things into place. She's the one that, because if everything was up to me, it'd be all over the place. It'd be all over the place, you know. But I would say, honestly, as far as like discipline or like structure goes, it would probably go back to me again. Like, I'm more, My wife's strict, but I feel like, I think we both about the same amount of strictness. Like we, there's, because we talk a lot, you know, we, that's one thing that me and my wife tend to do is that we work with each other a lot, you know, like, hey, how do you feel about this situation? How do you feel about this situation? Okay. Cause, and I realized it when my daughter had her first fight at school. And it wasn't, you know, honestly, it wasn't even a fight. I think we just, you know, if you haven't realized it by now, I can be a little overdramatic. I can be a little overdramatic, but it wasn't a fight. But in my mind, it was. And my wife calls me. They done breached the gates. It's time to go ahead and lock it in. And my wife, she calls me and I tell her, like, look, I'm on my way. She's like, you don't have to do that. I said, it's too late. I'm already in the car. You know, I show up to the house and I'm like, all right, before we go up to the school, I just need to know where your energy's at. I just need to know where your head's at. How are we doing this? You know, are we going to address the parents? Are we going to address the child? And she's like, you can't address the child. I was like, you're right. You're right. We can't address the child. You know, we can get arrested. Fine. Then I guess we're going to address the parents. You know, so we work together a lot. We're a good team.
That's good.
Sometimes.
That's good. Was that a hard adjustment to make, or did it kind of come naturally because you saw your mother kind of being basically a single mother? Did you feel like you had a model for how to do that with another person, to parent with another person, or was it sort of learning as you go?
You know, my wife, I feel like, is probably one of the most greatest people on earth. And I say that because although a single woman raised me, you know, and I got a chance to see what it's like for a single woman to, you know, to raise a child, to raise two kids and make things work. Because I'll tell you right now, single mothers are by far one of the hardest working people in America. Let me rephrase that, in the world. They, you know, they the tooth fairy, they Santa Claus. They, you know, they got to be a doctor, a teacher, they a cook. Then they got to be a mom. Then they got to be a dad. So I saw all of that. My wife was also raised by a single mother. But the thing is that my wife, there's 4 years in between each sister. And my wife's mother has three kids. So my wife is the oldest. So she took care of her younger sister, but she really took care of the third child, which is an 8-year difference between each other. So my wife got parentified by the time that my wife was 8 years old, taking care of a newborn. You know, I remember my wife telling me that she would have to do her hair, get her ready for school, get her, you know, do this, you know, take her everywhere that she goes because her mother had to work. And the only person that could take care of her kid, you know, take care of the kids was my wife. So my wife was always able to just, like, my wife can handle a whole household if she needs to.
Do you feel like you bring your experience with the Marines into parenting? Does that inform your parenting style at all?
Oh, unfortunately, it does. Unfortunately, it does. I'm going to just say unfortunately, you know, because, and my wife has told me, she's like, they're not Marines. You know, they're not Marines. And I've heard that statement so many times. They're not Marines. When my daughter is, like, one of the biggest things that ever happened was we were at the park and my daughter, you know, how kids do you. You know, they say, can we go to the park? You say no. She said, can we go to the park? I said, no. She said, Dad, can we go to the park? My oldest, little does she know, has me under her, like, wrapped around her finger. I try to act like the parent, but I'm going with whatever my oldest says. I'm going with whatever she says. She's really running it. And she hit me with that about 4 times until I finally just said, fine, we can go to the park, but we're not doing anything else. So we go to the park and she's at this wall and, you know, a little rock climbing wall. She gets halfway up there. She gets halfway up there and says that I'm coming down. I said, Dakota, what are you doing? You still got a lot more. You still got halfway to go. She says, Dad, I'm coming down. I said, Dakota, what are you doing? You know, I sent her back up the wall. She says that she got halfway up there again, came back down. She got halfway up there again. And she did that about 3 more times until finally the training clicked back in. And I deal with instruction with Marines. I train Marines. So I'm not accustomed to, I can't. I'm not accustomed to this. You know, if there's a way, you got to make a way. So what are you doing? We got to keep going. What are you doing? Why are you telling me that you can't do this? Keep going. And I wasn't her father. I was her sergeant. I wasn't her dad. I was a Marine. I always say unfortunately because they're not Marines and they're not in the military. And I feel like being in the military, we sometimes blur that line because in a sense, we're dealing with other people's children and we got to make decisions the same way that a parent does. So when you switch back over, you deal with the exact same type of problems, just in a younger version. And you end up clicking back over like, hey, this is how we're going to do it. So do it. Oh, you telling me that you can't do it? Do it. And you forget that this is a child. This isn't an adult.
That must be a really hard thing to switch back and forth between, I would think. And I'm the same way. I have no military experience or anything, but I'm very much that way because my mom was not that way with me. And so I want to make sure that, you know, there isn't a lot of I can't or I'm not going to try. But it's hard when they're so little. I'm never too sure if I'm pushing it too far or not.
You know, and I thank my wife for that. My wife is the one that she'll step in and say, okay, that's enough. You know, like, you need to go somewhere else. They need to go somewhere else because we're getting nowhere. And, you know, it always comes back to that fear of, you know, I pushed my daughter so hard because it was, what are you going to do when you try your hardest and it doesn't work out? Are you going to quit? What are you going to do when you try a task and you don't get it on the first go? Are you just going to quit? Here we are halfway up this wall. You can't back down now. You got to follow through. And you tell your kids, you don't want your kids to be quitters. You don't want them to not be, you know, fully commit to something. And I think that's kind of where it blurred the line right there.
Yeah, that would be really hard to switch back and forth. You're fortunate to have your wife, though, that she can kind of come in and be like, okay, listen, that's enough now. And
oh, absolutely. And one thing that I love is that my wife is one of those assertive people. You know, she's very assertive. When my wife walks into a room and I know this is a parenting, so I keep bringing up my wife for some reason. But what I love is that she can walk into a room and command the entire room. So she's not shying away from me saying like, hey, that, you know, that's enough. And I'm like, no, we're going to keep going. And then she's like, all right, I tried my best. No, my wife is going to step in and be like, that's enough. We're done.
That's probably nice to have because as a Marine, you're the person who has to be in charge. You have to be the alpha person. And it must be nice to be able to kind of let that go a little bit with your wife.
Oh, absolutely. My Marines always come up to me and they're like, oh, I bet you're in charge at your house and all of this. I say, absolutely not. The Thigpen household is definitely a matriarch. It is not a patriarch. It's a queen. It's ran by a queen.
How is your relationship with your kids? Do you ever worry that they're getting away from you or that your relationship isn't good enough because of your relationship with your father being what it was?
I feel like sometimes because I'm in the military and I'm constantly gone or I'm somewhere else that I don't want to miss a moment where they needed me the most. And I feel like being in the military, sometimes that does. And then sometimes I feel like I have become my father. Instead of being addicted to alcohol, I'm just in the military. You know, my son, I wasn't there for his birth. I was on a deployment. I was in a different country when that happened. So I watched all of that through a phone. I cheered my wife on through a phone. And when my son needed me the most, he got sick and they didn't know what was wrong with him. And they ended up having to tap his spine when he was just 2 weeks old. And my wife had to be there for that. I couldn't be there for that. And I felt like, damn, you're just like your father. You know, like when you needed him the most, he wasn't there. And now here he is and he needs you the most and you're not there.
Mm-hmm. How do you mitigate that for yourself? How do you work through that?
You know, I always tell myself that, you know, success comes with sacrifice. You got to sacrifice time with your family so you can have time with your family. You got to be able to make those hard decisions now so that way you don't have to do it later. And I try to tell myself that, but I mean, it doesn't get easier. You know, it'll never get easier, especially when, you know, right now I'm just missing steps. I'm missing births. Soon I'm going to be missing games. Soon I'm going to be missing dances. And I, my kids know, like my kids know that I'm in the military. They know where I go. You know, I try not to hide that. Like, hey, I got to go do this or something of that nature. Like they know. Yeah.
Are you pretty honest with them about, do they know about your relationship with your dad or are they not aware of that?
They don't know. Well, I feel like I could probably explain it to my 7-year-old, but they don't ask. That's one thing that they don't do is, you know, I think they asked me one time and I just was like, I don't have a dad. And then they just was like, Dad, you have to have a dad. And I was like, okay, I do have a dad, but my dad's in Michigan. And they'll drop it right there. They don't really pry.
What are some of the hardest things about parenting for you? What kinds of challenges do you face?
Oh, my patience. My patience. These kids test patience. Kids test patience. And each kid is a different type of child. Each kid is a different type of child. And I feel like my oldest is a blessing. She's patient. She's well-mannered. She's the ideal of what a perfect baby would have been. Like a perfect kid. She doesn't do anything. My son pushes the envelope every chance he gets. And I'm talking about if you said walk, he's running. If you said don't, he's doing. He's on go 100%. When he was, I think he was about, 6 months old, I left one of those little Starbucks bottles on the table. how he climbed up there, how he grabbed it, how he broke it, how I got blamed for it, I don't know. But he's been like that. He's been breaking stuff since he was a baby. He's, you know, and he doesn't have patience. My son doesn't have patience, period. And my wife tells me that it's because you don't have patience. That's why he doesn't have patience. And when he loses his patience, I lose my patience. And now we're both just all over the place with two chickens with our heads cut off.
Yeah, mine are the same way. I have one that is just like on my shit all the time and will never give me a break. She's going to make it hard for the next 20 years, you know? And then I have one that's really easy. Which one is more like you? Which child for you is more like you were?
I'm going to say my oldest, you know, and I say my oldest because she's shy. She's very timid. And I say that because before the military, I was very shy. I was very timid. I mean, as I got older, I grew comfortable within my skin, but I had to grow into that. And I feel like my youngest is like me. My oldest is like me. You know, she doesn't make waves if she doesn't have to. She tends to go with the flow of things. She's very, but from what I hear in school, my oldest is actually like my wife, you know, always in charge. She'll tell everybody in the class to be quiet or we're going to get in trouble. My oldest runs things behind the scenes. Like she's pulling strings behind the scenes. And when I look at them with my kids, like my oldest relationship with her brother and sister, my youngest is still too young for us to figure out which one she's like. But my son and my youngest, Charlotte, they fight all the time. Connor and Charlotte fight really? All the time. But
how do you handle the fighting? That's the one thing that drives me out of my mind.
Oh, I stay out of it. That ain't got nothing to do with me. That, like, hey, they could work that out on their own. You know, and I try to stay out of it because I don't know what caused the fight. And I don't want to be the one to jump in. Because when I jump in, it's martial law. I'm taking both out. You know, everybody loses if I jump in. So I've heard them have arguments where one said something to the other, and my Connor and Charlotte, they fight each other. Coda and Connor will fight each other. But Coda and Connor, they fight over like things like, oh, you got the iPad. Give me the charger. No, you give me the charger. And I'm like, both of y'all share. And they're like, well, this is my charger. Then go get your charger. Well, I broke it. All right. Well, there you go right there. Problem solved. You know, but then when I see Connor and Charlotte fight, Charlotte's 2, Connor's 5. And I have to go up to Connor like, Connor, why is this happening to you? Charlotte's 2. Oh, no. I walked by and I saw Connor was hitting Charlotte and Charlotte was kicking Connor. And I'm just like, Charlotte's 2. Like, what are we doing, Connor? Like, what's going on? I can see the issue with you and Coda. You know, and my youngest is just like my son. Like Charlotte and Connor are the exact same. That's why they always butt heads, because they act the same. They're rough. They're jumping on each other. They're doing everything. So I stay out of that. I don't want to get involved.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's hard for me not to get involved because it the sound like just makes me want to stab my eardrums out. So I wind up getting involved just because I can't take it anymore. But it never ends well, and I need to stay out of it more.
Oh, I mean, ain't nothing like this. Like you go up there and you just say, you know what? We're shutting it down. Everybody go to bed. And this, the funny thing is that Connor and Dakota used to have the same room. So they would get in trouble together and then they would have to go to the room together. And my daughter brought it up. She's like, look, I don't like getting in trouble and then having to go to the same room as Connor.
Together, stuck. What kinds of lessons do you want to give them? Do you parent your son and your daughter differently? Or do you go about it the same way? Do you have the same lessons that you give them both?
I try to keep everything, the templates all the same, but I do fix it to each child. And I say it not in a manner of Dakota doesn't get treated different than Connor because Dakota's a girl. Dakota gets treated different than Connor because Dakota sees things and handles things differently than how Connor would. So based off of their personalities and how they, you know, who they are, I talk different to Dakota because Dakota's a lot more sensitive than Connor. I talk different to Connor because Connor doesn't even have patience. So I got to bring Connor off the ledge. And Charlotte, I talk to Charlotte differently than I talk to all of them because of her personality.
Yeah, that's the hard thing too. With the girls, they have such different personalities and having to switch that parenting style like on a dime. They could be fighting over the exact same thing, but what I say to one will set one off, and then the other one, that's what she needs.
Mm-hmm. Like if I yelled at Coda, Coda's gonna take that to heart. She's like, wow, okay, fine, I'm done here. If I yell at Connor, Connor's gonna be like, okay, wow. But he's not gonna leave, you know, so I have to be definitely a little bit more sensitive with them.
And how do you mitigate being away from them? Like, how often are you together, and how long are you together for before you have to leave again for the Marines?
Well, my family right now, they stay in Arizona. So I try to, anytime that I got time off, I try to see them. I always try to make time for them. You know, there's days where it's just like, all right, well, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. Like, if I left, it wouldn't be worth the squeeze. But then there's days where it's just like, all right, well, I'm about to go see my kids because my kids haven't seen me, and I'm not, like, I need to see them.
So are you able to participate in the parenting from a distance? Is that something that you're able to do? Yeah.
One thing that my wife tends to do is, like, she'll FaceTime me so that way I can see them, and she gives me an update on what's going on in their lives. So, like, if I hear, like, Connor, well, it's always Connor. Connor's the troublemaker. So if Connor's acting a fool, she's going to let me know so I can talk to Connor about that. You know, if Coda's, I feel like Coda's a little too old for her age. Like, she's an old soul in a young body, because Coda's tracking the coronavirus right now. She's staying up to date with everything.
Yeah. Does she have anxiety?
Yes. Oh, my God.
Yeah. My one twin, Harper, is the exact same way. Super anxious about everything. She's aware of everything. We can't watch the news.
You know, my wife says that, like, Coda's, like, on the couch wrapped up in a blanket watching the news about the coronavirus. And I'm just like, I'm like, come on.
When will you get to see them again? Like, when will you be home now for an extended period of time? Or are you not sure?
Once everything blows over with this whole pandemic and stuff like that, then I'm gonna probably head out there to go see them.
And how long will you be able to be there?
I'm probably definitely going to take like a week off. I'm more than likely going to take like a good week, 2 weeks off just to be with them.
Do you hope that any of your kids go into the military, or is that not something that you want to see them do?
You know, bits and pieces of me would like it. You know, I wouldn't mind them going in the military just for the simple fact that, you know, the military saved me. I had no intentions of going to college, and I didn't want to stay home. So the Marine Corps did something for me. I don't know what it would do for them. Would they want to see the world? Would they want to follow in my footsteps? I mean, by them going into the Marine Corps or going into the military, we will have stuff to talk about, you know. But I want to see them open up their own businesses. I want to see whatever they do, and that's it right there. Whatever they do that makes them happy, I'm 100% behind it. You know, if they want to open up a tattoo shop, then go for it. And me and my wife joke about this all the time, because Dakota is very good with she can draw. She's very creative. And I told my wife, I was like, you know, we need to be careful. Coda might be a starving artist. And she's like, what do you mean? Like, Coda's going to be painting these pictures, doing these galas, but ain't nobody showing up to these galas but us, you know. And we're buying Coda's stuff in private, and Coda keeps bringing the price up. Like, she's like, yeah, like, they bought this one painting for $1,200, but that's me and my wife buying that painting for $1,200.
The next one's going to be $2,400, so get ready.
You know, and we're over here trying to talk her down, because they're like, Coda, what do you, you know, maybe they won't buy that. They're like, they always buy my stuff. They always buy it. You know, and we're over here writing checks and putting the house on the bank, you know, because we're trying to buy Coda's stuff. You know, so, but whatever makes them happy, I'm always going
to
be behind.
Yeah, I'm the same with the girls. It doesn't matter to me what they do as long as they're happy. But I do want them to go and do their thing. I'm not going to be a good adult parent. Like, when it's time for you to go, you go do your thing. Like, I can't have you here at home anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, what's so crazy is, like, my wife, she says, like, you know, she wants them to get out of the house and do their own thing. I'm one of those type of people that's like, hey, look, y'all can stay here as long as y'all like. You know, whatever y'all got to do to make the dream work, you know, to make the dream work, you know. And I've always wanted those houses where the whole family's in the house, you know, and it's just so much going on. A Tuesday night feels like Thanksgiving, even though it's just spaghetti night, just because it's just so much love and so much family there, because I didn't have that growing up.
I was just going to ask, do you think that that's because of the way that you grew up?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My wife comes from a big family. She can't wait for the kids to leave.
Yeah. I'm excited for college. I'm excited for them to go do their thing.
Hopefully, like, you know, they don't mind me, like, you know, buying. Like, I told my wife, I was like, look, when they get older, we can sell the house, get our RV, travel around with them.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to grandkids?
You know, I feel like I am. My wife is, but I feel like I'm going to be one of those old grumpy grandfathers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, get off my lawn kind of grandpa.
Get off my lawn, leave me alone, get these kids out of here.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I feel like I'm more like.
I can't think of any other questions. I mean, anything that you want to say, I want to give you the opportunity to say it, but I can't think of anything else to ask. Is there anything that I should have asked you and didn't?
Oh, no. I think we hit everything, to be honest with you.
Okay, cool. Right on. Yeah, I think this will be a good episode. What would you say to parents out there who are starting to have kids and maybe they're unexpected, or dads who are not sure they're really invested in this and they're not sure they want to hang around? What would you say to those fathers?
I would definitely say you're not the only one. In fact, there's so many books on how to do parenting, but the thing is that you can't do parenting until you do parenting. You know, you can buy all the strollers that you want, all the milk warmers. You probably won't even use it. You can read all the books that you want, and your kid's going to act the exact opposite. I have three kids, and each pregnancy was completely different than the last. And I feel like it's just one of those, like, be the person that you needed the most. Be exactly who you needed the most.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. What's your favorite thing about parenting in general?
When they come up to me and they say, "Dad," that's it right there. That does it for me every time. When I come home from work and they run up to me and they hug me, that does it for me right there.
Aww, that's awesome. All right, this is going to be a cool episode. I appreciate you taking the time.
Always. No, thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Demetrius recalls at one point being sat down by his father and told that it was time for him to become the man of the house. That was before the age of 10. But that's how he's seen himself to some degree since that day. While he's not able to be physically with his family as much as he'd like, Demetrius said he takes comfort in knowing that his heart is with them regardless of the miles between them, and he cherishes the role of fatherhood so much that he doesn't care if his children ever move out of the house. He's so happy with fatherhood, he said, he's ready to buy all of his daughter's paintings on the sly and get an RV so he and his wife can follow them throughout their journeys into adulthood themselves. Demetrius is a fellow podcaster, and his show, Extraordinary Thoughts for the Ordinary Mind, is a great self-help offering with plenty of episodes if you're looking for something to binge in whatever level of quarantine you find yourself at the moment. You need to check it out, and you can do that by following the link in the show notes. If you liked what you heard, share it with a friend. And come back next week for another episode. The music for this podcast was written and produced by my father, Bob Gross, on his goddamn electric ukulele. I'm Stacey Gross, and this has been Two Moms Day Drinking. See you next week.